The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's time once again for Dueling Reviews, a show where two guys sit down with one comic and see what happens. Only this week, we're doing something a little bit different. This is our first crossover show between another show and in our Major Spoilers podcast network. This week, we're crossing over with the Major Spoilers podcast. So we've got hosts from both shows on Dueling Reviews this week.
Hi, I'm Matthew from the Major Spoilers podcast.
And I'm Steven from the Major Spoilers podcast. Thanks for having us on Dueling Reviews this week.
I'm hoping that this Dueling Reviews format isn't too weird for us.
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot of things going on this week. Obviously, we're not doing main shows. A lot of our main shows are taking the week off. But there was one thing that happened this week that we thought we ought to comment on, because if we wait too long, it'll be Christmas, and then the Christmas episode will be out, and then it'll be too late. So we thought,
and
after,
that, of course, was the season finale of The Blacklist.
Oh,
featuring
No, I don't know what that is. Anyway, okay. I am, of course, talking about the Doctor Who 50th anniversary special that aired on Saturday worldwide, simulcast multiple times, well, simulcast live on BBC America and BBC. So a lot of people got to watch it in the early afternoon or early morning, yes, depending on where you were. And other people got it on the replay. I watched it on Sunday after it went up on iTunes, because we don't have BBC America on our cable provider.
I watched it both times. We watched it with no commercial interruptions in the first broadcast.
Oh, really? Cool.
And then again at 6, so my wife could watch it with us.
Cool. Well, I watched
it
without
the... because I got to see it twice.
Yeah, I got to watch it without commercial interruption. And so
I've now seen it 4 times since it aired.
Excellent. In about 48 hours. So
what
that gives
I
you about that once every 12 hours you've been watching it.
I am a nerd.
So this story tells us what happened to the now ninth Doctor. And this is where we get into it, because is using the name, does that mean that that is the Doctor? So right after McGann bit it, and we saw that in
Night of the Doctor,
which was a YouTube BBC mini episode that was amazing and told you what
really
happened
was
to McGann and his great adventures. We step right into the John Hurt Doctor, who is, we're going to say, the ninth Doctor for all purposes.
I'm going to call him 8.5.
Okay, you can do that. But he was around for a long time. I mean, he was around for, what, 300 years fighting this Dalek Time Lord space
time war.
War,
yes.
Why is it called a Time War?
Because it took place, apparently, throughout space and time.
Ah, so in the past, the future.
All time, basically, was at war.
Yeah, because we've never really seen the Time War, right? I mean, this is it. We get to see the last day, the day Gallifrey falls. That's what we get to see.
References to the Time War go all the way back to Christopher Eccleston's first season in 2005.
Yes, but I know that because he's talking about it being over and what he did with it and et cetera, but we've never actually seen the Time War.
This is true.
And so here we get to see the John Hurt ninth Doctor, if you want to call him that, eight and a half, is deciding to pull the ultimate gambit. He figures that if he's going to do this and end the Time War for all time, he's going to have to destroy Gallifrey and the Daleks at the same time, and he's going to do it with the ultimate doomsday device, which is sentient.
The moment.
Yes, the moment. And he almost pushes the button, except that the moment, this doomsday device, like I said, is sentient and pops out of nowhere and starts interacting with the Doctor's mind and talking to him, and essentially turns this into It's a Wonderful Life kind of story. But instead of going backwards, instead of going backwards and saying, hey, look at all these things that you did in the past, the entity, which adapts itself in the guise of Billy Piper, Rose Tyler, says, well, this is, I've searched your mind, and this is one of your past selves or your future self. I can't remember, which is kind of interesting in itself. And then she opens up a time vortex in which John Hurt Doctor, Matt Smith, and David Tennant Doctor, 10 and 11, all pop into existence or all start interacting with one another and trying to deal with this this time war thing.
The beautiful moment comes when 8.5 leaps out of the time vortex and sees them standing there. He says, I'm looking for the doctor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And 10 is like, well, you certainly come to the right place.
Yes. I you know, I've got to say, and this, I don't know. I really like the episode, but there were times that this really, really, really felt like the ultimate universe of the three doctors, where you've got the old crusty doctor, you've got the karate chopping doctor, and you've got the bitchy doctor in between.
This actually, I mean, I'm almost certain that there was intentional parallels drawn and references to the three doctors, which...
Well, yes, and also the five doctors at the end of the bit.
Yeah. The three doctors, though, was the only time that we actually got a team up of all the extant doctors at a given particular area. It's the only one that doesn't have an asterisk on it, because it had Hartnell, it had Troughton, and it had Pertwee, all three of whom are now deceased, which makes me sad. But I kind of liked the fact that 10 and 11 got into that kind of rivalry like 2 and 3 had, and one would pop up and be mean and crotchety and tell them to knock it off.
Well, and that's what I liked about John Hurt's character, not knowing what comes next, not knowing his own future, is suddenly, and who's been through all this stuff and is now the warrior, is really kind of plays it very straight. Hey, man, I'm not here to F around.
Yes.
I'm here to take care of this problem. Now show me to the doctor. Oh, it's sand shoes and what's he call it?
Sand shoes and grandpa was what the 11th called.
Oh, well, Chinny. Well,
you and Chinny over there.
Well, Chinny, but he also said something about the bow tie. Head Dickie?
Oh, yes.
Head
Dickie? With your Dickie bow and
Dickie
your
bow,
sand
that's it. Dickie bow and sand shoes, which, you know, was really great. But
I loved the interactions between the doctors.
Right.
Which, and that I think, you know, John Hurt as that, and this is fascinating to me. John Hurt has never been a part of Doctor Who's backstory before this particular thing.
Right.
He has made one appearance in a cameo. I, after seeing this, am like, yes, that is totally a doctor. That is an official doctor. I have no compunctions about saying, not only is that an official doctor, that's a pretty awesomely official doctor.
Yes.
And I really, really like his portrayal of the character.
He is. We're going to have to call him number nine, right? Because isn't Matt Smith the 11th doctor?
Well,
I mean, in most conventional thinkings, because there's
Paul,
a moment.
Paul McGann is number eight,
right?
Which would have originally, when they started the series, they were counting. And BBC, again, does not give us this. BBC doesn't necessarily say in the show, this is what happened. But yes, they've always referred to Christopher Eccleston as the ninth doctor. So a doctor in between eight and nine. He would officially be the ninth, which would push Matt Smith to 12.
Which is interesting because they did call it out at the end of the episode. Now, again, listeners, if you don't know what the Major Spoilers podcast is, if you don't know what Dueling Reviews is, we spoil the hell out of everything. Because at the end, when they're pulling off their grand scheme, the one guy is like, oh, great, three doctors. That's all I need. And they're like, no, it's 12. And then they say, no, it's 13.
We've been planning this all of our life. Yes.
And yes. And then you get a cut shot, a quick close up of Capaldi.
Eyes anyway.
Yeah, yeah. And so
3 seconds of Capaldi's eyes, all 13 of the doctor's incarnations.
Yes. And which I found fascinating. I mean, really, really fascinating.
Well, think about
because
this.
Then
13 is the natural regeneration limit. So they have now set this up to where Capaldi's doctor is officially the last regeneration. Well, and we have to deal with that question sooner.
And here's the thing. The moment entity, we'll just call her Rose.
Yes.
Rose is trying to really make the doctor think about if he pushes this button, and I'm talking about John Hurt doctor. If he pushes this button and destroys Gallifrey, he is going to destroy billions upon billions of lives, and he's going to have to live with that fact for the rest of his life. And he goes, oh, no, I've only got a few left or whatever. And then the moment says, that's going to be your punishment. you're going to live. And I don't know if that is the implication of you're going to live and become, you know, Eccleston and Tennant and Smith, or if that is an implication of, oh no, you're never going to die. You will. This will be your hell, where you will constantly have to live in order to atone for this mass genocide that you're about to commit. That's what went through my mind was, oh, he's going to live forever.
Right. I don't know about that. But I will say this. I like the fact that throughout that whole thing, we know that he chose to do it because that happened in the past.
Right.
And then, but yet, you know, you get to the point where all of this is rolling us, the viewer, up to our understanding of what we know is going to happen. And what right. feels, what it seems like is going to happen is 8.5 comes forward, sees himself, interacts with himself, and says, well, think of all the lives they've saved because they're trying to make up for my big mistake.
Right. And he and the Rose entity, or is either the Rose? No, he and
Clara
have that conversation where he's like, you know, looking back at this, look at all the good things that they've done. And we've got this subplot of the the race, the alien sucker race.
The Zygons.
The Zygons trying to take over the Earth. And of course they stop it. And there's some bigger implications that we can talk about a little bit if you want to. But the Hurt Doctor is looking there and going, look at these two guys. Look at what they've been able to accomplish, bringing the Zygons and the humans together to negotiate a peace treaty. That's wonderful. And then he says, I've made up my decision. And he knows that in his mind, in order for these great things to happen, a lot of people are going to have to die. And he's going to have to count them or expect that one of his future selves will count how many children died when right. Gallifrey fell. 2.4 billion or something, million, 2.4 million.
He actually asks them. And it becomes an interesting point because Smith, who has spent several hundred years in this incarnation.
400 years.
Says he doesn't remember.
Yes.
And at which point Tennant, the 10th Doctor, goes off on him. How could you forget that? How could you ever walk away and forget what happened?
Right.
It's an interesting moment because we're seeing I think my biggest complaint about the new Doctor Who has been the fact that the 9th Doctor canonically was around for like a year.
Mm-hmm.
And then the 10th Doctor was around for like 4 years. And his actual tenure as a Doctor equated to the number of seasons he was. And it mm-hmm. bothered me that the first Doctor got 450 years.
Right.
The 9th Doctor got a year and a half.
Right.
So, you know, throwing all of that stuff in and having Matt Smith having been around and, you know, we can go back and they can do additional stories. They can put in right. retcons and right. implants and stuff we don't know about.
Right. And so, that's what I like.
Love that.
I do like that fact that, you know, they did hit home in this piece is, yeah, these stories that you Americans and you Earthlings are watching on the TV, these stories of Doctor Who that you're putting into your own canon universe, there's so much going on when the Doctor pops out and then pops back in looking for his companions that you don't know about. And for Smith to have disappeared, you know, or to have had adventures for 400 years by the time we got to this point, mm-hmm. it says that there's a lot more to be told.
Right. And that, I think, is the wonderful part of Doctor Who, because for 7 years now, we've been told these stories with the assumption that the fans we have made right. that Paul McGann
was only there for a few weeks.
Yeah. Paul McGann regenerated directly into, you know, Christopher Eccleston.
Right.
And then we went from there. We found out that that was wrong. We found out that there were several hundred years at least of time war fighting.
Right.
And that John Hurt, the Hurt insert, for lack of a better word, 8.5, had all of this story and all of this depth. And in a way, it works for me because it doesn't force us to take 8, who was kind of a blank slate Doctor, and mm-hmm. make him into the killer. It doesn't force us to take 9, who is clearly all about the guilt and the redemption from the Time War. Neither of them were actually the ones that did this.
Right.
The one that did it is a regeneration that even the Doctor doesn't like to admit existed. And I like that concept.
And
And I really love the interplay between 8.5, 10, and 11 throughout the special.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was really good. I mean, at one point, you know, they bring up timey-wimey, and the Hurt Doctor says, "Why do you guys have to talk like children? Can't you just be grown-ups?"
Why are you ashamed to be grown-ups?
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But the best part is, it's 11 that says timey-wimey, and 10 throws him under a bus. He's like, right, I don't know where he...
Yeah. It's good. I mean, there's really good interactions. And
this
you
is
can,
my machine and, that goes ding. What's it do? It goes ding.
If they could have gotten Eccleston, if he would have just said, yes, you know, I do want to be in this, it would have been very interesting.
It would have been very... different.
Because here you would have had John Hurt, the weary warrior. You would have had Eccleston, the very bitter and angry person, the Hope Doctor, and then the doctor that's just, you know, there. You know, the young one. Even
well,
though
and
he's
my
really
wife
old.
Pointed out something very interesting about Matt Smith's doctor. He has been constantly reinventing himself throughout his years in the role.
Right.
And it's not just a question of, you know, his wardrobe has changed, his background, his attitude. But as he has gone through this, he started out kind of a second Dr. Clown, and he's evolved into almost a seventh Dr. Manipulator.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see how many different facets 11, and I'm going to keep calling him 11 until they give me a scheme that makes sense.
They did. They have given it to you. Hurt is 9.
They have not.
Eccleston
they
is 10.
Not.
They said all 13 doctors have shown up. In your mind, in the way that it's written now, if the Time Lords were a real thing, I'm sorry, John Hurt is number 9. He is now number 9.
Argument. This is like Carl trying to tell me to go to the Wikipedia. Yeah, I don't believe the Wikipedia. But more importantly,
well, you're going to believe what you want. You're going to believe what you want to believe, even though the TV show told you that McGann is 13.
The TV show hasn't told me.
They
that McGann
did.
Is 13.
They
McGann
did.
Is Capaldi.
They did.
Is
that's what
all
I'm saying. They said
present.
All 13 doctors are present.
But that doesn't mean
and
I
when
have
they
to
say,
number them.
And when they say 13, they cut to Capaldi.
You can argue with me.
That's, I'm just telling you, that's the way it
all
was in the show.
All 13 of him are here does not mean that they're named that. Because, and this is very important, this is a story about time travel. And this two-hour show, fascinatingly, plays with time travel in a way that even Doctor Who doesn't usually, where
well,
we see effect before cause.
We saw McGann turn into John Hurt.
Right, we did. But we see a Fez fly out of the time vortex in this show before we see someone throw the Fez into it.
Yeah.
We see the effect of that happening. We see the effect, we've seen the effect that the actions that John Hurt's doctor had on the doctor before we see him go back and be the cause. This is a really fascinating episode to look at in terms of the time tracks, because John Hurt, you know, they will call him the 9th if it makes you happier. The 9th-ish doctor comes forward in time from the point where he makes his, you know, terrible decision.
Right.
And at that point, we've never seen anything of this doctor, anything but just vague portents of what may have happened.
And there's a good reason for that, too, because – and this goes to what happens when the time stream writes itself. Mm-hmm. These doctors don't ever remember having these interactions, and we've seen that time and time again. The three doctors, yes. they said, hey, we're not going to remember any of this. The five doctors, right. They said, we're not going to have any of this. That one special with Tennant and Davison, they're not going to remember any of this. And so when we get to the big conclusion of this thing and they're all standing around patting each other on the back saying, hey, look what we did. They suddenly all come to this realization that, hey, wait a minute, we're not going to remember this. And as far as we know, you, yep. the one that is the bitter one, did push that button and blew up Gallifrey. So in a sense, our timelines are righted and we are still continuing on being regretful of the 2.4 million children that died, you know, trying to forget it for 400 years, being bitter over the time war and that ultimate decision. And so I like that when we're talking about that time and the time streams writing themselves, Matt Smith mm-hmm. only has one goal in mind, which I'm hoping we will see play out in the next season is
I think so.
How to find Gallifrey.
Well, I believe that they have said that the Christmas episode may be leading, either have or be leading to his regeneration into
excellent.
The Peter Capaldi.
Excellent.
Which brings up another point. all three of the active doctors in this episode are literally right before they regenerate.
Mm-hmm.
Because John Hurt's doctor, well, during the special, we see him regenerate. We see his regeneration begin, and he right. actually says what the first doctor said, this body's wearing a little thin.
Right.
The 10th doctor is here at a point when he's traveling alone, so it's after, you know, it's in those four specials right before he regenerates mm-hmm. in the end of time.
Yeah, and he says, I
and
don't want to go.
11th, if the 11th doctor is regenerating at Christmas, all three of these men are at the tail end of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctor himself is about to regenerate the 12th time, which means that the doctor is at the end of his lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the fact that the last action that they did, and I think we can spoil it.
Well, and
10
so,
and 11.
So here's the deal. So here's the deal. The Zygons have used Gallifreyan technology to freeze a moment of time and inject themselves into these paintings that are bigger on the inside. They're Time Lord paintings.
It is
a great concept. I wish one that we would have seen years ago develop, and maybe it has, because these images are really 3D. And as you look at it, you can see around the edge of the frame because it's capturing that moment of time and preserving it. And so what the Zygons have done is they've inserted themselves into these pictures and that they have the ability to come out at any time in the future. And so, you know, there's some issue with some technology that a unit has been hiding away from the doctor and trying to prevent him from getting, and they figure out a way to get into the Black Vault. But then they come to the realization, what if the three of us start calculating what it would take to take the entire planet of Gallifrey, insert it, freeze it into one of these, another dimension, essentially, and because the Daleks completely surrounding the entire planet, firing nonstop. The minute that the planet disappears, the Daleks will wipe each other out, or because through the crossfire, and everyone will simply believe that they destroyed each other, or that in this case, the Doctor pushed the button. John Hurt pushed the button and destroyed everybody.
And it really is beautifully handled because the three Doctors show up, and it's a sequence we've seen earlier in the film. They show up, and they're like, attention, Gallifrey, we are the doctors and we have a plan. Now, granted, it's a terrible plan that probably won't work.
Right. And
I'm just thinking out loud over here.
And what's really cool about this, and this is what triggered me in my mind when on Gallifrey, the generals and the whoever's are there plotting and looking at how they're going to get out of this problem. And suddenly on the viewfinders, you see Matt Smith, you see John Hurt, and then you see Tennant all there at the same time. And the first thing that triggered in my mind is, oh, we're going to see the first doctor because that's how they injected him in the five doctors. And then I thought, oh, they could do everybody this way. And sure enough, they do. And all of a sudden, there's 13 hologram screens all popping up in circles. Oh, I do love the round things. And they're all saying, hey, we've been calculating this for centuries. It's going to work. And
I am 13
doctors show up and they do it. It's great.
Yeah. I'm not ashamed to say that when I heard Hartnell's voice say, Gallifrey command, this is the doctor, there were some manly tears.
Oh, yeah, it was really good.
And then all 12 of the doctors show up, and he's like, oh, God, 12 of him.
I mean,
and then the one guy is like, no, 13.
Yeah, and so what's really cool about this, and when you want to talk about Hartnell, is the very first shot. I mean, we open with the original Doctor Who intro.
Yes, his theme, and then the policeman walking down
the
junkyard, which is where we find out that Clara is now working at the Coal Hill School that Susan went to in the first episode.
Yeah, which was really awesome. I thought that was a great nod. I don't
I
know if they
see Clara's teaching credentials.
Well,
I want to know
she's
what
a substitute.
She's teaching.
Yeah, maybe she's probably history. She does have a background in I forget what
child
it was.
Care.
Well, no, it's something else because it was something she was working on while she was being a nanny. For those two kids when they went off to the amusement planet. Maybe I don't remember what it was.
Cheese or something.
Anyway, she's there, and so that was a nice nod back to the original. And so we do, in a sense, through some cutscenes and from some Madame Tussauds wax dummies, we do get to see all 13 of the doctors, 12 of the doctors in this episode. And we get to see Capaldi's eyes in this episode, too, which was nice because they don't reveal the costume that he's wearing. And so I thought that was really kind of neat.
it was nice. And it was an interesting moment. It was one of those things where they set this up as the biggest challenge the Doctor has ever faced.
Right.
And they sold it. And they sold it by giving us, again, effect before cause. We don't even know what the 13th Doctor looks like, how he regenerates. But this episode, the events of this episode were so momentous that not only do all 12 of the extant Doctors show up, but the one who doesn't exist yet came back.
Right, right.
That's how you use time travel.
Yep.
And by the way, I think only the 4th Doctor is a wax dummy.
Yes, yes. Well, no. No, I think they all are in that last final shot, because none of
Having
those guys.
Having looked as close to it as I can at the HD, it is very clearly Christopher Eccleston. It's very clearly Colin, or at least Colin's face. I don't know if they digitally inserted could have done heads on somebody else's body.
They could have done some digital mumbo jumbo on that, but I would They've find it very, helped. Very hard to get through that. But otherwise, I mean, it's really cool. Now, there is one over at UNIT. There's a scientist girl named Osgood, mm-hmm. Which is wasn't that Clara's name?
Clara was Oswin Oswald.
Oh, Oswin Oswald. Okay. But the Osgood girl is constantly wearing that long Doctor Who scarf that Baker would
The fourth Doctor did work with UNIT. She may be a fangirl.
Well, maybe. I mean, if she's done it that long, but I think I would have figured she would have been a bigger fan of third Doctor, who actually
the third Doctor did work with UNIT more.
Yes, because that's when he was confined to Earth and couldn't fly off and do anything. So I thought that was interesting.
The fourth Doctor's era had UNIT episodes.
Right, right. Oh, no. I know Tom Baker did a lot of that stuff. And so, at the end of the special, Matt Smith is sitting there and he's like, well, where am I going to go to next? What should I do? And maybe he goes, I like this. Maybe I'll become a curator. And then, you hear a voice behind him say, well, maybe you will. And it turns out
I think you shall.
And then it turns out it's Tom Baker.
It's a very recognizable voice. Yes, it's an 80-year-old Tom Baker. And that was amazing.
Yeah, because especially the conversation, because it was very lots of innuendos, but a lot of on-the-nose kinds of things where it actually gave, the Doctor is supposed to give hope. And so the Tom Baker character, we'll just call him the curator here, basically says, oh, no, people have misunderstood. There's not two titles to this portrait. It's not No More, and it's not Gallifrey Falls. It is Gallifrey Falls No More. And that says, hey, I know something about what's going on here. He also says at some point to Matt Smith, he goes, oh, you know, when you regenerate or, you know, your future selves may look kindly on something to the effect of
your
favorite.
You could always come back and revisit an old face.
Yes,
just
there you go.
Favorite.
Yes.
Implying that the curator may actually be the Doctor himself.
Yes, he seemed to know an awful lot in that short exchange about what was going on.
And it was one of those things where I think it was played exactly right, especially, you know, the way Tom Baker can act the hell out of things.
Sure.
And maybe even overact a little bit. But the point where he was just like, it may still be out there, which means you have a lot to do.
Right, right, right.
And he's like, you know, this is only what I would say if I were you, or more to the point, if you were me.
Mm-hmm.
But I love the ending where he's like, who knows? And
right, then right, right.
Walks up. There's nothing quite like a Tom Baker monologue. And I, as disappointed as a little part of me is that we didn't have all of the living Doctors.
Yeah, I kind of was disappointed in that, too.
I understand that you can't really, you know, the one-off joke, the time differential is broken and that's why you look like you're 60.
Right.
That worked in Time Crash. I don't know that it would work for a long-term adventure. And I don't feel like having, because there are, you know, if you count John Hurt, there are 8 living Doctors.
Mm-hmm.
7 of whom might be interested in being in this. Wait, are there 8? There may be 9.
Well, so let's see. There is Tom Baker.
Tom Baker.
There's Davison. Yeah. There's
Colin Baker.
Then there's
Sylvester.
Then McGann. Hurt. Eccleston. Tennant.
Eccleston.
And Smith. Mm-hmm. So there's 9 of them that are alive.
And 8 of them might be interested.
Are you more disappointed in Eccleston now that he decided not to come back? Or are you just like, well, you know, the story still worked without him. It would have been nice.
Here's my thing about Eccleston. I understand Eccleston's thought process in that many of the times, you know, with the exception of Peter Davison, who was a very established and well-known star, a lot of times when they cast Doctor Who, they cast either an unknown guy or a character guy.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Baker, John Pertwee, Patrick Troughton are all character actors. And if you look at stuff they've done before this, none of it is high profile. Eccleston was a well-known and well-respected actor when he took the role. And he kind of took it, and I'm almost certain there was an element of stunt casting on the producer's part of, let's get this name in here. Not a huge name, but a big enough name that people who wouldn't necessarily watch the show might come in and go, oh, it's that guy from 28 Days Later.
Right.
And Eccleston, as an actor, is one of those guys who, you know, he treats his acting very seriously, and he doesn't want to go back and repeat himself and whatever. And he's an actor-y actor, and he's one of those guys who's like, tradition, whatever. You know, if he does Fiddler on the Roof, he talks like Mandy Patinkin for a month and a half. But I understand why he wouldn't want to come back. I am glad that,
but
they,
do you think that
they got the rights to use his face.
Right. Well, I'm sure that they already did that. I mean, that was already a...
Yeah, but I'm sure he gets like $20 for them using his face.
Probably a little bit more,
you know,
than that.
Likeness rights, they have to go, Christopher, we want to use your face. Can we use this footage? And Eccleston has to go, sure, whatever, I'm from the North. But I understand why he didn't and why he wouldn't. And I respect that up to a point, because I think the fact that he didn't led to the Hurt insert, which is such an excellent story point and is used so interestingly here that I can forgive him.
Okay.
Because I think if he'd come back, we wouldn't have had that moment, and we wouldn't have had the same elderly doctor interacting with his younger, older selves.
Well, I don't...
and telling to knock off their crap.
I'm not certain that it would have been Eccleston playing the Hurt part. I'm saying that,
well,
they probably would have injected Eccleston in there with more of the morose of, look what you've done, old man, and really serving as the counter to, you shouldn't do this, as opposed to the other two that were just like, eh, it happened and we're moving on.
So let's, you know, if we were to say, could they have put Peter, Colin, Paul, and Sylvester in this? I think they could.
Yeah.
But you have to deal with the fact that Colin and Sylvester are 70 years old.
Yeah.
Colin, you know, is 150 pounds heavier and has much less hair.
Mm-hmm.
Sylvester has a cane, doesn't get around the same way. Even Peter, you know, looks to be a 60-year-old man.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the way they used Tom was very well played.
Yes.
It was very respectful of what came before. And it's also nice because Tom has never been a part of any of the official crossovers.
Yeah.
Four was not a part of the Five Doctors and anything else, you know. It's only recently that Tom has been willing to come back and, you know, do things like the audio plays.
Right,
come back to be a part of the Who convention. So having Tom in here made sense to me, because to a lot of people, Tom is the face of the Doctor.
Yep.
Having him come in and have his bit, that I think is nice. And as much as I'd have loved to seen Peter and Colin, they did their little thing. I don't know if you saw the Five-ish Doctors.
Yeah, I've seen that one. Yeah, I've seen that one.
That the Five-ish Doctors special that they did on BBC with the three of them sneaking in and trying to be a part of this special.
Right, right.
That's funny. And that's good to me. I can deal with that. That gives me, you know, my expectation that they really do respect and love the role. But I feel like, yeah, they did the right thing. You have the cameo, you have the coat. It's like, as long as I get to see the coat, I'm good.
Yeah.
In that final shot, they all get the basically the full body appearance.
Well, yeah. I mean, it was really good. I did like that a lot. Now, the other thing, you know, there's so much stuff going on here. Of course, we see UNIT and we see legacy characters and relatives of those legacy characters appearing.
Yes.
In the form of Kate Stewart. Mm-hmm. But I also found it fascinating because I'd never really paid that much attention how much the TARDIS changes with each regeneration on the outside, not just the inside, but the outside, because you see the last three, or you see the Hertz TARDIS, and then you see Smith and Tennant's TARDIS, TARDISes, they don't look like the same box.
Nicely, though, Kurt's TARDIS looks about halfway between the classic series TARDIS and Eccleston's TARDIS. And I'm like, that's perfect, because his character seems to be wearing part of the old costume.
I like his costume. I like Hurt's costume. That black, or not black, brown leather jacket is super cool. The scarf, which is long and wrapped around, that's just I can't wait to see people cosplaying that. And what would be great is if they can get some old people to cosplay that look like Hurt.
This is the point where elderly fans can now come as something other than the First Doctor.
Yeah.
Well, and, you know, fat guys like me can go and get a t-shirt and cosplay as Colin. by the way, I love Colin. The Sixth Doctor does not get enough respect.
Oh, I know. You tell us every time the Doctor
That's
comes
right.
up.
Colin.
The other thing that I found fascinating is the discussion of the sonic screwdriver and how the outside changes. It gets a new case, but it's the same parts and the same programming on the inside. And that's what they use to logically explain how they're able to do these thousands of years of calculations in a microsecond.
And the beautiful thing is that sequence plays out really well and really perfectly. And it seems like it's just a joke, because they get to the point where they've managed to tell Hertz screwdriver to do this calculation.
Mm-hmm.
And 400 years later, subjectively, it's complete with Matt Smith's screwdriver, and they're ready to blow up the door. But then the door was never locked and Clara busts in.
Yeah. It was good.
That's a cool joke. And then it turns into more than just a joke.
Right.
It becomes the thing. And I'm like, oh, these guys are good.
Yeah. Anything else? Were there any other Easter eggs or things that we need to be aware of in this episode?
Oh, tons.
If
tons
people are going to go back and watch this again.
There's a moment where Kate Stewart says, bring me the file code name. I can't remember the code name, but she's talking about the three doctors.
Yeah, the three doctors. Yeah.
And she's like, it's in the 70s or the 80s.
Well, that would have been the five doctors, though, right?
No, the three doctors.
Oh, okay.
But she's also referring to the fact that UNIT originally was set in the future, but mm-hmm. then kind of wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So the question of whether the UNIT years happened in the 70s or the 80s is a thing.
Cool. All right.
The 10th Doctor refers to having married the Queen of England
mm-hmm.
previous to his regeneration mm-hmm. in the past.
Right.
Which I thought was nice.
And we get to see him getting married.
We do. And it's also kind of awesome. The Zygons, of course, are a classic monster.
Right. So we get a little bit of that.
We do open with the Foreman Yard. We talked about the Coal Hill School. There's just mm-hmm. there's tons of stuff.
We'll throw some more things out there that listeners
Let's see. What else do
missed.
I remember that you did?
I mean, you start to see some of the old. You get to see some of the old TARDIS interiors.
Yes.
Pop up here
and wonderful.
There.
That's wonderful. The white things.
Yeah, the round things. I like the round
what
things.
What are those? I don't know.
And the whole time that those two are being giddy about everything, Hurt is just there rolling his eyes like, oh, my God, you guys don't take this seriously.
Oh, and the best moment of all, though, is at the end when Hurt finally gives in, where they're like, all right, we're going to do it. And Smith yells, Geronimo.
Right.
And Tennant yells, Allons-y. And Hurt's like, oh, for God's sake. And joins in yelling a catchphrase as they go and turn on their TARDIS. You have to love how much John Hurt puts into the role. So that's
mm-hmm. so what
there's
are,
tons of stuff.
So what are things that are, you know, we've been talking about things that we like and things that people missed and these mm-hmm. kinds of things. What are some things that are a setback to this piece?
I would say, and people have actually asked me if I understand, if you remember the episode, The End of Time,
right,
when it was revealed that Rassilon and Gallifrey were trapped in a second.
Mm-hmm.
And Rassilon, as played by Timothy Dalton,
yes,
brought Gallifrey out and nearly destroyed the Earth.
Right.
I don't know how to explain that. I frankly don't.
But they went back in, though, right?
And that's
at the end of that. So they're still out there. I was a little disappointed. I was kind of disappointed that we didn't see Timothy Dalton's character. I was really when they showed the battle room. I was like, oh my God, they're going to bring back Timothy Dalton, and then they didn't. Yeah.
Well, Timothy Dalton has regenerated already into Daniel Craig.
Probably.
So he's not around anymore. I don't know. I'm trying to think of stuff now, and I can't just think because I was just like, TARDIS of Furman is awesome. I will say I did like the fact that Tennant and Smith were mocking each other about their accents.
Mm-hmm.
neither of them uses their real accent.
Mm-hmm.
Smith was using received pronunciation, making fun of the Cockney accent that Tennant uses, but Tennant actually is Scottish.
Right.
Whereas when Smith talks in his normal accent, he actually has a Cockney accent, very much like Tennant, the 10th Doctor's, when he calls him Dick Van Dyke.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was kind of cool. And there's, in the unit, the Black Archives,
yeah,
there's a list of, and pictures of all of the classic companions.
Right.
And interestingly, Clara seemed to stop and pay a little bit extra attention to a picture of Susan.
Right.
The First Doctor's granddaughter that
mm-hmm.
I thought was
interesting. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just, I still, you know, I there are a couple of answers left from that one where Gallifrey came out and tried to, what was the name of that one? It wasn't The End of Time.
The End of Time.
Was it The End of Time? Okay. The two people that were kneeling down with their faces covered, I still don't know who they were, but they were supposed to be someone related to the Doctor. I was hoping maybe that would pop up.
They were Steed and Mrs. Peel.
Yeah, I'm sure. We have to find what happens next, and I'm excited about the adventures. I don't know. I think the Zygons seem to be just that gateway to get us into this adventure. They never really seemed like a serious threat.
The Zygons and the bits with the Daleks, especially the point where they blow up a Dalek and throw it into the room.
Mm-hmm.
That just felt like fan service.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of hoping that we would have seen more. I said this at the beginning. I wish we could have seen more from the Time War except for the final day. But, you know, that's what, you know, this piece is about, is the final day of the Time War.
I really think that they did that well, though, because when you talk about something where the entirety of the universe from both ends of time
mm-hmm.
are fighting and fighting and fighting and being destroyed, you can't show something like that in its entirety.
No.
By definition, anything you try and do is probably going to be disappointing. So I'm kind of glad that they kept it personalized to Gallifrey. And specifically, even when we first see it, the children and the families of Gallifrey.
Mm-hmm.
So that when the doctors start saying, how many children did we burn that day? We know from the beginning of the episode, we've seen the children, we've seen the families running around. We know that that's set up and that makes emotional, that has emotional heft.
Right.
We've seen these poor kids screaming. And the fact that the doctor actually gets to go back and do his little doctor shtick where he fixes people's lives
mm-hmm.
to himself
mm-hmm.
is one of those things that it's so perfect that it's almost awful.
Right.
And I can definitely see where fans would be like, well, they've undone one of the most interesting parts of the backstory. But they haven't.
No, I think the gimmick of the you're not going to remember this adventure kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think really helps keep everything in line. Although it seems, if this were a comic book story, people would be going, meh, what a cop out. Meh.
No, it's time travel. The Legion of Superheroes has been doing it since 1958.
Yeah,
get away with murder and time travel.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I guess bottom line for me is I did enjoy this. I probably will sit down and watch it again, although the thing that I'm going to watch next, and maybe tonight, depending on if I get caught up, is the Doctor Who... not documentary, but the story about how the first episode came about.
And how Doctor Who Adventure came in Space and
Time.
That's
Adventure
good.
In Space and Time. The one that has the guy from Harry Potter playing Hartnell.
Argus Filch.
Yes.
Playing Hartnell very well. He never quite nails Hartnell's voice.
Right.
But he has
a lot of look to him.
Excellent stuff in the look. He has the body language down, and he definitely has a feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, I have to say, I do like that. You should check it out.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it. I already got it as part of my download package. So I'll be watching that, and I'm looking forward to that. And I'll probably watch this at least one more time just to see if there's anything that I missed. But for the most part, I think that I'm okay with this as it is, and I'm looking forward to the December episode. And I always like the Christmas specials a lot. Because they seem to be really great adventures. This one was, I thought, a really good adventure that was able to bring back a fan favorite Doctor, as well as tell an interesting story. But to be honest, I'm really only giving this one, like, if we're using a major spoilers rating, I'm giving this a 4.5 slice of meatloaf rating on this. It was good, but it wasn't the, oh my God, I just, you know, wet myself over the excitement of this piece. I really enjoyed it, but I didn't think it was perfect.
I feel like I'm satisfied with it because they had a lot of marks to hit.
Mm-hmm.
You're playing a multiple Doctor story. You're playing a multiple Doctor story where you're already working at a disadvantage because one of the Doctors is, for all intents and purposes, if you can call such a thing, a retcon.
Right.
You're playing a story where no matter what you do, somebody's going to be mad.
Yeah.
As the probably the world's biggest Sixth Doctor fan, I'm satisfied with, you know, the representation of the first eight. I'm satisfied with the way this story breaks down as a standalone.
Mm-hmm.
If you just sat down in the movie theater and watched this,
oh man,
there's a lot of backstory, but the story holds up because it's a story of a man who had to do something awful. What does he do? How does he justify it? And then these other characters get involved who also happen to be him.
Yeah. And
I would say,
and do I'd redeem the character.
Four.
And I mean,
four
they do
slices of meatloaf.
They do redeem. I mean, John Hurt is redeemed at the end of it. He isn't this despised person that the other doctors want to forget, even though everybody will forget.
And he says the line that I think is probably going to define his character. He's like, I won't remember it, but today, if only for this moment, I am the doctor once more. And I'm like, yeah, you are. John Hurt. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Aliens burst out of your chest 30 years ago, mister. You're like an actor head guy.
Yep. I mean,
you were like the president in V for Vendetta. Yeah. I mean, that I would say as Doctor Who specials, multi-doctor anniversary specials go, this is the least flawed of them to date.
Mm-hmm.
This is 4 out of 5 slices of meatloaf for me. It's not a perfect story.
Yeah.
But it was a story that was engrossing enough that I did not start trying to unravel any threads until well after my third viewing.
Yeah, cool.
It dragged me in. It made me cry. It made me cheer. And my kid was like, who's that? What's that?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
my
that's
God.
And from the dueling review standpoint, I would say this is something that you want to watch if you're a Doctor Who fan. But if you're only a casual person, and if you're someone like Zach or Rodrigo, who don't watch the shows and have as much background with Doctor Who as Matthew and I do, this may be something that you want to skip for a while. Because if you go into it and say, well, I want to find out what all the hoopla is about, I'm going to sit down and watch me this Doctor Who episode, you're going to be completely lost.
Work your way up to it.
Yeah.
Start, like I say, if anybody says, where do I start with Doctor Who? I say start with, you know, season one of the Eccleston run, Rose.
Yep.
Work your way forward. It's all available on Netflix.
It's only
and then
seven,
when you get
seven,
to this,
yeah.
This is awesome.
Yeah, exactly. All right, listeners, that wraps it up for this special dueling review episode. We won't have one later this week like we normally do on New Comic Release Day. We also will not have the Major Spoilers podcast or Critical Hit or Top 5 this week because we are celebrating the fourth Thursday of November with family and friends this year. But we will have a special message for everyone else. We do have a crammed in Munchkin Minute that'll be coming up soon because there was some news announced that we wanted to share and not wait another extra week. So that'll be coming up soon. But I hope you guys enjoyed this. And we don't get to talk Doctor Who as often as we want to. I know some people would love us to have a whole show that breaks down every single episode of Doctor Who. And some people who have said, oh, my God, I hope they never do a Doctor Who show. And so here's your little taste of what might be. And until next time, keep reading comic books. If you want to find out what happened with.
If we do that, we should call it Radio Free Gallifrey.
There you go. I think there's already one of those out there.
Shit.
Yes. But what was I going to say? Oh, if you want to find out, this week also concluded IDW Publishing's 12 issue run on the Prisoners of Time, which featured every single one of the 12 doctors. If you want to find out what happened to that, head over to majorspoilers.com and check out that review. If you want to get in on our VIP chats or you want to get in on our bonus track episodes, you can do that by signing up at members.majorspoilers.com. If you want to get your Christmas shopping done early, because Black Friday is coming up this week. You want to avoid the hassle, the long lines, all of that stuff. Go over to majorspoilers.com and click on that Amazon link and shop away.
Boom.
Same price, same delivery, just a little bit comes our way and helps
same
us keep
time,
doing more of these
time.
Great things that that we enjoy creating for you for free each and every week. So until next week, Matthew, I hope you have a good fourth Thursday in November. And to all of
you
our listeners,
well.
I hope that that you do that. You can follow our adventures on Twitter. You can follow Matthew at Mighty King Cobra. And you can follow me at Major Spoilers. And until next time, take care.